Born in the grip of oppression, I fought for my liberty. I paid with the blood of my people. Freedom has never been free. Now my door's always open to dreamers and friends. But when I'm attacked, I protect and defend. Because my name is America, I stand proud and free.
Welcome everyone, and as you all know, I spent the last weekend at a conference called Back to the Future, put on by freedomspeaks.us. It was an incredible conference. If you go to freedomspeaks.us, you will be able to see the podcast of the conference. The speakers were incredible, and the message that came through with each speaker is that we will have the knowledge, but if we don't use it and act, that's our downfall. So sitting on your couch, listening to the radio, driving in the car, listening to the radio, watching TV is meaningless if you don't do something afterwards. Now, of course, my hot button is run for school board, because I truly believe that if we don't take back our generation of children, we will not have a country, because they will be fed such garbage on critical race theory, where everything that is humanly possible is racist, and that will filter down throughout their lives, that by the time they graduate high school, they will hate their family, they will hate God, and they will hate their country. So we can control what is closest to us in our government, which is our school boards. Run for school board. If you can't run, then actively support a good candidate who is dedicated to making sure that our children have an honest, truthful education, because the only way that will stop critical race theory and racism is honesty. Don't allow people to frame you as a racist. Don't allow that to happen. When you hear someone saying that, tell them, no, I'm not a racist, and explain why. I've been canceled. They've tried to cancel Karen. Well, they're not going to cancel this Karen. And I say that over and over again. We have to take control. We have to be in charge, and we have to take back. And this is one of the ways to do it. Another way is to join the precinct in your hometown. Go and work for the precinct, whether you become a poll worker, whether you work as a precinct manager, and hopefully you can get elected to a position. I have discovered that the majority of the precincts, especially in the rural districts, are empty. Well, if they're empty, guess who gets to fill them? Certainly not the people who have our values. So one of the bad things about being an American patriot is that we have a bad habit of saying, here's the information, go read it and make your own decision. We have to recognize that these people are incapable of making their own decision. So what we have to do is help them in their decision-making process and not allow them to make their own decision, but help them guide it, because that's what they're used to. The best way to defeat the enemy is to learn their plan and change the outcome. And we can do that because, believe me, they tell us their plan all the time. You're listening to Karen Schoen, and this is the Prism of America's Education. And we are very lucky today to have a dear friend who has been on our radio show many times and has brought a wealth of information. Michael Cutler, welcome to the show. It is a pleasure, as always, to have you.
Thank you so much, Karen. It's great to join you. Thank you for the work you do and all the other, say, activists. Concerned Americans is something I like a bit better. But we've got to be mythbusters. And you're right. Never, ever allow your opponent to define who you are, because if they can do that, you will be defeated. I was going to teach debate on the college level when I had the opportunity to become a federal agent. My career took a turn. But on the debating team, one of the most important principles, number one, be fact-based. Number two, never permit your opponent to define who you are. That bullying tactic is used all the time, and they've been very successful with it, and we need to bring that nonsense to a screeching halt.
You are so right. Michael, you wrote a fabulous article that I think will give people a better understanding of what this immigration is all about, because over and over and over, we've been told this is a humanitarian crisis and the immigration policies don't work. And I know that one of your favorite sentences is, the immigration policies are working exactly the way they're supposed to. So yes. Can you explain to our new listeners who may not have heard or understand that, and what's really behind immigration in a, quote, humanitarian manner?
Sure. And by the way, folks, take out your pen, pencil. I just want to put up my website and the two websites that I do writing for, because I want you to read the articles afterwards, but we're going to be discussing it right now. For years, I've been privileged to work with the David Horowitz Freedom Center, and I write for Front Page Magazine, frontpagemag.com. And recently, I've been invited to also write commentaries for the American Conservative. Basically, what I've been hammering away at is the idea that the immigration system has gone from a law enforcement system that honors the immigrant background of America and has become a delivery system. And when we're told the system is broken, it's a lie, it's designed to fail. And the article that Karen is referencing is at Front Page Magazine. It was just published 2 days ago. Profiteers of Biden Administration's Open Borders Policy. And the subtitle, Malfeasance Has Its Reward. Now, I want everyone to stop and understand the way the lies are being spread. Number one, the immigrants, quote unquote, and these aren't immigrants, are talking now about illegal aliens. If they come illegally, the Biden administration is going back to what started with Jimmy Carter way back when. Don't dare use the word alien. That's an insult. No, it's not. It provides clarity. And clarity is the last thing that con artists want. They want to obfuscate the truth. Magicians use blue smoke and mirrors. They do use artful language. That's why I tell people, do not use the term political correctness. It's all Orwellian newspeak. We think with words. When you control the language, you can control the thought. The term alien simply means any person, not a citizen or national of the United States. Where in the world is the insult? So by blurring the distinction that if we're a nation of immigrants and you dare suggest that we determine who comes into the country, you're anti-immigrant. Well, the immigration law, specifically Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, and I always include links to these sections of law and other materials in my articles. That's why I want you to check them out. That section of law tells us who to keep out. It has not a single word about race or religion or ethnicity. If it did, I couldn't have enforced those laws for 30 seconds, let alone 30 years. My family was decimated in the Holocaust because of bigotry and hatred because I'm Jewish. But the laws do say that we need to keep out aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Think about COVID-19 right now. Aliens who are severely mentally ill are criminals or terrorists or spies or are human traffickers or drug smugglers or Nazi war criminals. Or aliens who would become a public charge, or if they work, would displace American workers and drive down the wages. What in the world is wrong with enforcing the law? And what you're hearing from both parties, we've got to modernize the immigration system. They want to eliminate a phrase in that section of law that says that aliens may not come to work in the United States if there are Americans ready, willing, and able to do the same job in that general locale. So think about that. What they want to modernize is destroy everything for Americans. These are globalists, and it's both parties. Please don't get drawn into this nonsense. It's only the Democrats. Ronald Reagan was a disaster. He gave us the first amnesty. It was supposed to involve 1 million. It almost involved 4 million. He gave us the visa waiver program that has been expanded ever since. He gave us the diversity visa. He didn't hire ICE agents to enforce the laws or immigration agents back then. Both parties are in on it. The way George W. Bush created the Department of Homeland Security violated the Homeland Security Act. Immigration was never supposed to be split in half. Customs and Border Protection and ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement. It was supposed to be part of one unified agency. These were all measures designed to take down our borders and make it impossible to enforce the immigration laws. Because what it delivers, folks, is an unlimited supply of cheap, exploitable labor. And I've raided sweatshops, and I've seen women forced to have sex with their boss on the lunch hour. They'd whisper it in your ear, and they'd be sitting there crying. So exploitation of workers is not the way you show compassion, number one. Number two, an unlimited supply of foreign tourists, hence the visa waiver program. an unlimited number of foreign students. Where do you think China got their engineers educated so that they're now threatening us? And I would recommend that after this program, go to 60 Minutes and check out the story about China and how they're aiming at world domination. And the Biden administration says, well, we're not trying to contain them. We just want them to abide by the rules. Really? We're not going to contain them? I mean, stop and think about that. And finally, and most critically, the immigration system provides an unlimited supply of clients for immigration law firms. The whole point of comprehensive immigration reform was not to get the aliens out of the shadows. That's a lie. You need agents to get aliens or anybody else out of the shadows. It was designed to provide an incentive for the illegal aliens to go to the waiting rooms of law firms. Zoe Lofgren is currently the chairperson of the House Immigration Subcommittee. By the way, I've testified in front of Zoe. I've testified before something like 17 hearings in the House and Senate. Zoe Lofgren, former high-ranking member of the American Immigration Lawyers Association, chairs the Immigration Subcommittee. When the Republicans controlled the House, Bob Goodlatte, Republican, was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee, which, among other things, oversees immigration. Bob Goodlatte kept pushing for an increase in H-1B visas. Why? Well, Bob Goodlatte is, you guessed it, an immigration lawyer, and his practice specialized in H-1B visas. And when I had an argument with him about it, he told me how his son would love to see hundreds of thousands of brilliant Indian programmers imported into the United States. Why? Because they're cheaper. He didn't say that, but that's the reason. My late wife died 35 years ago, was a brilliant programmer, had an MBA in computer science, Phi Beta Kappa graduate. Many of her colleagues, all Americans, had comparable credentials. They are getting slaughtered on the workforce because of an importation of an army of foreign programmers. So we're losing intellectual property. Some of that is falling into the hands of our enemies. It's destroying jobs and wages for Americans. And we are in the middle of a disaster. The only president in decades to stand up to all this was Donald Trump. Now, I didn't always agree with him. His messaging was terrible, but he was right on target when he talked about the need for sovereignty and secure borders. And by the way, if you look at the 9/11 Commission report, and I provided testimony for the 9/11 Commission because I've investigated and arrested terrorists. People don't realize this, but immigration failures was the number one reason we had multiple terror attacks, including the attacks of 9/11. Hard to believe we're coming up on the 20th anniversary in just a few months. So border security is national security. Border security is supposed to protect national security, public safety, public health, and the jobs and wages of Americans. And we have been bamboozled into thinking there's something wrong with looking out for those four or five very important objectives. It is twisted. And since Biden started his nonsense, and incredibly, he's blaming Trump for his disaster. You can't make this stuff up. He reminds me of the thugs that we arrested, and they blame their crimes on somebody else. Biden is also now saying that we have to be compassionate, let these people in. Well, guess where these folks are coming when they run the border? They're coming to towns and cities across America. What I read was a very interesting article in Vice, and Vice also has a TV program. And what's now happening is people are wiring money to the cartels who are smuggling people into the country and frequently kidnapping them, holding them for ransom. I saw this when I was part of the anti-smuggling agent, the anti-smuggling unit in New York City. They were some alien. I want $1,000, whatever it was back. Give them the money, and they would get to the United States, and they pushed them into a safe house, so-called, a stash house with armed security. And they were told, forget about getting to New York on the 1,000. We now want 5,000. Well, where am I going to get the money from? I don't know, but I don't care, but you're coming up with the money. So family members, relatives, neighbors, whomever, are now rushing to put together money to pay the kidnappers. And guess how the kidnappers are getting paid? By money wire service. And who's helping with that? Places that you would never imagine. Besides the usual Western Union and all that, they're actually going to Walmart. They're going to other companies. And these companies charge a fee for the service of moving money. They're a moving company. Banks are moving companies. Think about that. So you have corporate America thrilled that people are coming to them and saying, I need you to move $5,000. I need you to move $10,000, because they are the silent partner who collects a fee whenever that money is being wired. And it's estimated, according to that article, in the last decade, $800 million have gone to human traffickers by the wire money services that we're talking about. How insane is that, Karen?
That is absolutely incredibly insane. Mike, I was asking you a question because I don't believe that Biden is capable of doing this by himself. So I imagine that he has lots of help, and that would come from the people that he placed in a variety of positions. Yes. So maybe you can give us a little clue as to who the real Alejandro Mayorkas really is.
All right. So first of all, Alejandro Mayorkas is well known. He is the head of the Department of Homeland Surrender, as I've come to describe it. He's not new to being part of DHS. He worked there for Obama. First, he was the head of United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, and then he became the deputy director for DHS. United States Citizenship and Immigration Services, I call them the locksmith to America because they adjudicate the applications for asylum, for citizenship, for green cards, and so forth. I always like to ask people, how do you get past the wall? Even if Biden completed the wall and slathered it with grease and electrified it, I can put something in your pocket that gets you across the wall with no problem at all. And what it is a green card, okay? Alejandro Mayorkas was responsible for adjudicating the applications. The people who worked there at the time during the Obama administration complained that he ordered them to approve everything that landed on their desk. As he put it, get to yes. Whatever it takes, get to yes. The 9/11 Commission said immigration fraud of people applying for such benefits are using the benefits as an embedding tactic. Many of the terrorists who carried out attacks in the United States got citizenship here, so they have two passports and it covers their tracks when they travel around the world. It endangers us. It endangers our allies. But Mayorkas could have cared less. The Office of Inspector General did an investigation and then found that he did indeed play politics with the visa process, specifically the treaty trader visa, the EB-5, used by terrorists, used by Iran. Very dangerous situation. And he is now the guy that's running the Department of Homeland Security, of Surrender, if you prefer. Now we've got another character on the horizon. And by the way, I wrote about this also for Front Page Magazine, Biden's DHS, Department of Homeland Surrender. And a week ago, I also wrote an article, Biden's Curious Choice to Lead Customs and Border Protection. The guy that he picked, Biden, is the Tucson police chief, Chris Magnus. His claim to fame is that as chief of police, when the Border Patrol came to him and said, we have an escapee, could your police please help us? He said, I don't help immigration enforcement. That's going to make people not want to cooperate with our local cops. So I'm not doing anything whatsoever to help you. You're on your own. Lots of luck. He is now going to be running the Border Patrol and the inspectors at ports of entry. The man who thinks that somehow enforcing immigration laws is damaging will now be responsible for running the Border Patrol. Can you picture this?
I am dumbfounded, but then I'm not, because I would expect nothing less from a group of communists. Remember, folks, that's what I say all the time. We cannot think of these people as American patriots. They are not. They have one goal in mind, and that is to destroy America. And the easiest way for them to do it is to leave our borders wide open, all while destroying the American culture.
It's worse than that. Biden, when he gave the address to the Congress, said, oh, there are 11 million folks. Well, first of all, Yale says there's probably close to 22, 23 million. I think it would be 30 million. But that's the tip of the iceberg. It was the same nonsense Reagan did. We have a million. We wind up with almost 4 million. But here's the number we don't know from Reagan and we don't know from Biden. How many children and spouses were admitted because of this? Let's say there's 25 million illegal aliens that Biden would give citizenship or green cards to. Now, remember, there's no ability to interview these people. There's no ability to do field investigations. The adjudicators will have to rely on information provided by the alien. They will lie through their teeth. There'll be no way of determining if they're lying. Okay.
But if hold that thought, Mike. Hold that thought. We have a break coming up, and people, don't go away. This is so important. It's important that you understand what is going on at the border and how it is going to affect you no matter where you live in this country. It does not make any difference. There is no such thing as a border state. We have 50 border states, and by the time they are finished, we will have no country. This is Karen Schoen, and you are listening to the Prism of America's Education with my guest, Michael Cutler.
Is a record player the best way to listen to music? Of course not. So why are you still taking vitamins that haven't been upgraded since the 1930s? Even if your vitamins aren't hard to swallow, it's time to upgrade to Healthy Cells pill-free, patent-pending microgel supplements that work at the cellular level to boost immune health, sleep better, focus deeper, and stay younger longer. They taste great, convenient on the go, and they're more natural too, without chemical binders, fillers, and coatings. Go to HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off your first order of any product. That's HealthyCell.com, HealthyCell, and use code OUTLOUD for 20% off.
Okay, folks, back again. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education with my guest, Michael Cutler. And we have been talking about the destruction of our country through illegal immigration and the closed-eyes idea of Biden. And also, George W. Bush came out with his book and his idea that borders should be open. Well, that tells you folks where all of this was leading from the time that he was in office. What do you think about George, Mike?
Well, I was told that every time I testified before Congress or every time my name came up in the Oval Office, he would scream obscenities. I wish I had a video. I'd love to see it. Look, his father talked about the New World Order. Ronald Reagan gave us the visa waiver program and that amnesty that set the expectation. Both parties have done this. When the Republicans controlled both houses, Trump could still not get the money for the border wall. And by the way, let's be clear, the border wall, this may shock you, was not designed to keep anybody out of the United States. You know, all the nonsense, it's a wall of hate. It's a shameful thing. No, the border wall does not keep people out. What it keeps people from doing is evading the inspections process at ports of entry. The border wall is like the velvet rope at the bank that guides the customers to the next available teller. Or you could compare it to the cattle runs at the airport. When you take a flight, you go through TSA, there's that rope, and you go between those ropes until you get to see a TSA officer, and they go through your baggage, and they check your ID, and then they let you on the airplane. Well, so here's an interesting analogy. Is there anybody with a rational brain who would get on an airplane if you saw people sneaking past the TSA? I don't think so. Yet we're being told it's okay to live among millions of people, not just from Latin America, but from all over the world, who have evaded that same sort of inspections process we conduct at ports of entry. And where are the Republicans? They want the cheap labor. They want the campaign contributions from the Chamber of Commerce, from the religious organizations that are being paid handsomely to deal with the refugees. It's both sides of the aisle. George W. Bush appointed Eduardo Aguirre to run Citizenship and Immigration Services. And he said his three priorities was one, clear up the backlog, which means rubber stamp everything. Number two was improve customer service. And this is just 3 years after 9/11. And he said, oh, and by the way, enhance national security. So national security was his third priority. And when you look at who he is? Well, Aguirre came from the Bank of America. He was the president of their private international bank for their big buck customers. He was a globalist. He boasted about how he got honorary degrees from Beijing and Santo Domingo. Thank you, George W. Bush. So please understand, it's both parties. John Hostetler criticized Bush. He was the Republican chairman of the House Immigration Subcommittee. And he said that what the Bush administration gave us was immigration incoherence, making it impossible to enforce the laws, secure the border, and thus protect Americans. No shock, his campaign was defunded. I went and campaigned for John. And by the way, full disclosure, I'm registered as a Democrat. I cannot tell you the last time I have voted for a Democrat in years because they've morphed into something that has nothing to do with the old Democrat Party. But frankly, where in the world are the Republicans?
That is the big, heavy-duty question. Where in the world are the Republicans?
But I want to make a point before we lose this, but I want everyone to understand. We started before the break to talk about the true magnitude of the amnesty Biden is trying to foist on us. Not 11 million, just as Reagan's 1 million wasn't 1 million. Let's say there's 25 million who get legal status. The argument is, well, they're already here. Yes, they are, many. Some aren't. They're going to lie about when they get here. no ability to prove it. You run the border, there's no record, right? But the other part of it is they could then bring in every single one of their minor children and their spouses. So let's say, for argument's sake, each alien claims on average to have four children. And I'm certain that Biden is not going to do DNA testing. So what's to prevent people to give somebody $3,000, $5,000 and say, here, take my son, take my daughter, claim that he's yours. We'll see that happening in large numbers. But let's just be optimists and say only four per alien on average will come. What's four times 25 million, Karen?
We're back to 100 million again. 100 million new people coming into America. Think of a pie. If you have a pie and you're splitting it by four, you get a nice slice. And all of a sudden, if four more people come in, your slice gets smaller. And then four more people.
This would devastate. But here's the problem. They want to talk about sustainability. Everyone who comes here needs more than a pillow. They need water, they need food, they need electricity, they need sewerage, they need transportation, they need health care, they need education. These are children. The Congressional Budget Office did a study that said that it costs 20 to 40% more to educate children who can't speak, read, or write English. What happens when you flood American schools with 100 million school-age immigrants?
Who cannot speak English and who are not even prompted and asked to learn to speak English. What does that do to a school? It inhibits the ability to communicate.
With these numbers, you won't have schools. It'll be over. This is not sustainable. We're not talking about a couple million. We're talking about adding 50% to America's population or more with no screening. How many of those kids, as we saw with the unaccompanied minors, are members of violent gangs? MS-13 flourished under the unaccompanied minor program. This is the destruction of America at the behest of our enemies. Understand that.
Isn't this Saul Alinsky's plan and China's plan?
Well, it's China, it's Iran, it's Russia. And that is why Trump hit a raw nerve, because Betsy DeVos was investigating the more than $8 billion, with a B, $8 billion that went to the schools like Harvard and Yale and Princeton that were not declared. God only knows how much more money went that was declared, but we're talking about tens of billions of dollars being pumped into America's best colleges by America's adversaries so they could select the faculty and they could determine the curriculum. I wish that the people that are woke would ask how woke China is and what they're doing with the Uyghurs in their own country, if we're worried about woke. Is that not a question that people should perhaps be asking?
Yes. And on the one hand, we have major corporations who are damning Americans for wanting to have elections that are safe and secure while they're turning around and doing business with China. Tell me what those elections are like.
Well, you've got to see this segment on 60 Minutes later. They also spoke about how chip manufacturing in Asia is through the roof. We only have one facility in America, because all that companies care about is profit. And by the way, I was on a conservative radio show and I said, you know, the capitalists have destroyed capitalism in America. And we got into a big argument. And he said to me, the Democrats want a guarantee of outcome under capitalism. You only have a guarantee of opportunity. I said, well, first of all, you don't have a guarantee of opportunity when you're bringing in an army of foreign workers to displace Americans. There goes opportunity. But I said, but in America, there is a guarantee of outcome. And he was adamant that I was crazy. I was wrong. I didn't know what I was talking about. And I told him I could prove I'm right with just two magic words. And when I gave him the two magic words, he was dumbfounded. And all we got was dead air and crickets. And you know what the two words were? Golden parachute. How many corporate executives run their companies into the ground and they are told to leave, but they go out the door with 50 million or 80 million or 20 million in their back pocket. But the people that lose their jobs through no fault of their own are escorted to their desk by an armed security guard who makes sure they only take their personal property and, God forbid, do not take a pen with the company logo, and certainly keep your hands off the stapler, and they get dumped to the curb. But the executive who created the nightmare, he or she has that golden parachute, which most certainly is a guarantee of outcome. So if you wonder why Americans think that maybe socialism is the answer, because what now passes for capitalism is really corporate welfare, and Americans have been left behind for decades by corporate greed and the corporate welfare state. Am I getting that wrong, Karen?
No, that is absolutely right. And how many Americans were told, we will give you a 2-month severance, but you have to train
your replacement is from India.
Replacement from India. Or wherever the replacement is coming from.
Disney did that, and now Disney is now saying that was a mistake. We should have just given them the severance after we fired them and let them leave. How about that one?
Yeah, nobody was saying we shouldn't have let them leave. They were Americans, right. And it actually cost more to let them leave than it does to bring in the other workers, but they don't say that. And
well,
they create artificial shortages. And here's a very interesting one. Because of COVID, many people are staying home. Because many people are staying home, they're using their pools. What is there a shortage of? You hit on this, Mike. We had only one company in America that makes the chemicals for chlorine. So what is there a shortage of right now? Chlorine. What will Americans not be able to do? Use their pool. Why? Because this crowd hates Americans.
Simple. Well, I don't know if they hate Americans or they're just so greedy that they look, there's a program in most companies, and my kids are engineers and I found out about it from them. Do you remember when you used to buy a dishwasher that lasted for 20 years? And today you're lucky if you get 5 years out of it. It's called cost out. The major companies, whether it's GE, whatever, name any major company, they hire new engineers. They have them sit there at workbenches and figure out ways to make switches and light bulbs and whatever other crap they're making cheaper. So they make the product so badly that it fails. And then they add back a teeny tiny little bit of metal and they add a little here and a little. So it just barely gets through the process. They get it stamped by the UL labs after they finally make it just able to pass. So the robust product that used to be reliable, you could say, well, I know I can trust that product. I've been dealing with whatever the company is for decades. Now, suddenly, it's not really the same product because of cost out. And they're using cost out with labor. They're using cost out with the manufacturing process. They're using cost out to bleed us dry. So these corporate executives who are now making, in some cases, over 600 times what their average employee earns. Think about that. In the 50s, the average CEO made 50 times and he or she was happy. Now they're making 600 times and they're still not happy. Think about the owner of Amazon who ended medical coverage for his part-time employees. The guy's the wealthiest man in the world. And in one day, because of COVID, picked up $13 billion, but he canceled health insurance for his employees. This is a level of greed that I didn't think was possible, even for these dirtbags. What do you think of that?
I agree with you 100% because we moved out to a farm and we discovered that we are better off buying the old equipment because they were made with metal. They were made to last. They were made strong and they actually did what they said they were going to do. The other day we went by Lowe's and my husband looked at the lawnmowers and he said, people are spending $3,000 for a lawnmower made out of plastic. That's what the parts are. How long is that going to last? You go over a couple of bumps on a farm in your lawn, whatever,
you know,
and your brand new lawnmower is now a piece
garbage. So all right, so let's go back to where we were. And that's the same con artistry that you're hearing about the amnesty. And you have all these reporters saying, when will you pass comprehensive immigration reform? I wrote an op-ed for the Washington Times back in 2006. I did a number of hearings about comprehensive reform. I gave it a new name. I called it the Terrorist Assistance and Facilitation Act. Then Senator Jeff Sessions quoted me from the floor of the Senate during the floor debate on three separate days and sent me a very nice certificate wherein he said that it was his belief that his ability to use my words convinced enough of his colleagues to vote down dangerous legislation. I now give it a second name, comprehensive reform. I call it the Overwhelm America Act. And yet, how many reporters will go breathlessly up to the politicians and say, why can't you pass comprehensive immigration reform? Nonsense. This would be a disaster for national security and for the jobs and wages of Americans. It would do incalculable damage. And by the way, I'm not anti-immigrant. I'm pro-enforcement. And that's an important distinction. Anytime you're labeled anti-anything, you have to climb a steep mountain to overcome the damage. I'm clear about where I stand. I'm pro-enforcement. I spent the year as the adjudications officer doing the marriage interviews. I was happy to approve green cards when it was appropriate. So my position isn't, I don't want anyone coming here, which is the lie. I want to make certain that the people who come here come in accordance with law and don't pose a threat to national security, public health, public safety, or the jobs of Americans. What a terrible American am I.
Well, you fit right along with me because I believe that people who come to America should learn English, should learn American values, and should bring something of value to the country that they are coming to, not be on the taking side. A taker is not going to help America. And that's a question that we should be asking. How is this illegal immigration helping Americans?
It's not just illegal.
Or even legal.
By the way, and that's the question that I've raised in my articles. I'd love to see a reporter stand up in the White House briefing room, but I'm not holding my breath unless maybe it's Ducey, and say to the president, how are your proposals helping Americans? Don't tell me how it helps, quote unquote, the immigrants. Don't tell me how it helps corporate America. Don't tell me how it helps crooked politicians, forgive the redundancy. The real question, how is this good news for the average American citizen? That's the question I'd love to hear where every issue is concerned. What do you think of that, Karen?
I think that is absolutely perfect. And unfortunately, Mike, we have come to the end of our segment. So again, I'm going to ask you to come back and join me again because our conversations are always incredible. Please tell everyone where they can find you, Mike.
Well, if I'm not lying on the sidewalk, I'm joking. Please. My own personal website is michaelcutler.net. I do a blog talk radio show Friday nights, the Michael Cutler Hour Blog Talk Radio. And I write for Front Page Magazine and I write for the American Conservative. But please, folks, take this information and have conversations with your neighbors, not arguments, not fights, conversations. They've been conned. They're embarrassed to admit they've been conned in many instances. Be gentle with them, but show them what is happening and why it's of great concern to all Americans, especially if we have children, nieces, nephews, grandchildren. We're talking about nothing less than the future of our country and the future of our kids. Could it be more important than that?
Thank you, Mike. This is Karen Schoen. You have been listening to The Prism of America's Education. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
It was a vision that gave birth to a unique multimedia platform that would combine classic talk radio, great writers, and memorable podcasts and videos. AmericaOutloud.com is a conservative leader in a field that is predominantly run by far-left progressive globalists. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Karen Schoen. You're listening to The Prism of America's Education. And in the last segment, Mike Cutler mentioned one of the ways that our products are being absolutely destroyed because the majority of them are being sent over to China and they are made with inferior quality. I remember when I was teaching marketing, that was one of the things that we taught, and that was a system which was called planned obsolescence, because the powers that be, the heads of the corporation, realized that the products made in America were so superior that they didn't wear out. And if they didn't wear out, then people had no need to rebuy them. So that by sending our products over to China, this is exactly what happened. When you use inferior products, eventually they have a five-year life expectancy, and you're forced to buy something new because, of course, that warranty runs out. The other thing that we talked about was the artificial shortages. So I want to give you a teachable moment before we go on, and that would be that one of the artificial shortages we are going to see this summer, especially in the South, because remember those red states are against Comrade Biden, and that would be the lack of chlorine. Now, due to the ridiculous EPA guidelines that force manufacturers to do all kinds of insane things, chlorine, which is used for swimming pools, which most children enjoy during the summer, and most middle-class families in the South have access to a swimming pool, well, there will be no chlorine. Just look at the prices. Just look at the shortages. As company after company says, we are out of chlorine. So this is a teachable moment for your children, because this is the way socialism works. When you have the demand and there is no supply, two things happen. One, it creates an artificial shortage, and two, it escalates the price. So we are going to see that this year. Again, a teachable moment for your children. We have lots of teachable moments, and I did want to talk to everyone about what's going on in Florida, because we have been able to pass some incredible legislation this year, and that was help due to the Florida Citizens Alliance. And when we talk about things that are going on in Florida and the Alliance, my go-to person again is Pastor Rick Stevens. Pastor, thank you so much for joining me today. And I am so proud of the work the Alliance has done. Folks, go and take a look at the Florida Citizens Alliance and look at some of the things that we, the people, a grassroots organization, is doing on a continual basis. You can do the same in your state. It's an open website. You don't have to be anything special to join, to look, and to copy. Copy the things that we're doing and put them in your state. Pastor Rick, I cannot believe some of the incredible bills that we got passed. And I think the best one that was on parents' rights. Can you explain to everyone why this is so important and why we were able to get it passed?
Well, sure. Somebody asked me, this has been the third year they've tried, and I was doing another interview, and the host asked me, well, what's different about this bill? And I said, well, the difference is it passed this time, because we've been trying to get the Parents' Bill of Rights passed in the Florida legislature for a long time. And I think that's a good example of what you were suggesting just a moment ago, that people really can and should get involved. You know, we often think this process is for the insiders and for people who know things that we don't know. Well, there are always going to be things that we don't know. When we started this, we didn't know a lot that we've learned over time. Some people have helped us. That have been there before. They've kind of coached us along, warned us about some things, all of the stuff you did. But we had to learn. We had to start, and we had to try. Some of the people that were involved with the Parents' Bill of Rights and who helped get it across the finish line are just people like you and I. They just got involved and they saw the need for it. One of the key people, a young lady, took a sentence or two. It wasn't very long, very much, to the representative who ended up sponsoring the bill. And that representative then turned it into a wonderful piece of legislation. In its essence, says to all of the state and other governmental agencies in Florida that parents have rights when it comes to their children, and you need to respect those rights. And so what the bill did was it took some of the things that are already in law and brought them into one place, and it took some things that we all knew needed to be in law and put them in the bill, so that now parents can go into this one place and see that they have rights. And particularly as an illustration to relate to education, the bill, the Parents' Bill of Rights, says that the parents are in charge of their students, their child's education. Now, we've heard from parents all across Florida. I have little doubt that it's true in other states, that they often feel like the school pushes them away, doesn't take their concerns seriously, doesn't want to hear from them. Well, the Parents' Bill of Rights in Florida says the parents are in charge of their students' education. And the other really interesting thing, and it does several things, but this is just a good illustration of what it does to help parents take courage and maybe take initiative to do that in their state. The other thing it says is that the school needs to make every effort to involve the parents in their students' education. You know, that's a big huge change. You know, we've heard from people that they tell us not to teach our kids this and don't do that because they're the experts, so to speak. Well, we don't buy into that. And now the schools, by this legislation, as soon as the governor signs it, will require the schools to actually purposefully, intentionally, we hope happily, engage with the parents and work with the parents and allow the parents into the education process of their children. That sounds like such an obvious thing. I mean, when I began to hear about this, and I experienced it a little bit with one of my children, but parents tell us it's a terrible problem these days. And yet it shouldn't be a problem at all. Parents should have always been welcomed in, should have always been respected. Their perspective, their insights should have always been well received, and the school should have been receptive to that instead of resistant. So this is a big step in the right direction.
It certainly is. Nobody is an expert over your child except you. And as a former teacher, I can tell you, I loved my kids when I had them. But 2 years later, I wasn't involved in their lives. You are involved in their lives throughout their lives, and don't let anybody tell you anything different. The most important thing that we can do is get our parents involved, and that's what this is all about. We also should be demanding we have access to the books and the materials that our kids are reading, and we have found that our kids are reading materials that the school board and the school district seem to feel is inclusive only to them and the parents shouldn't see. Well, I believe that that's a horrible thing as well, especially when it comes to sexually explicit harmful materials. We had a bill about that and we had a success in that. Can you share that one with us? That was Bill 410 and HB 545.
Yes, that was a partial success, and we have to look at it that way. The legislative process is messy. Anybody anywhere who wants to get involved in that has to be prepared for disappointment, has to be prepared to decide what they will fight for and what they can live to fight another day for. It can be a daunting process. The important thing that I would say to anybody who wants to get involved is don't compromise your principles. Don't become a sellout in that sense. Find a way to navigate the difficulties, but be true to your principles. But the bill you're referring to was a bill that we, the Florida Citizens Alliance, wrote. We felt like it was a very strong approach to help parents and all of us who care about kids protect them from some of these harmful materials. It was really, hijacked, maybe is one way to say it, early on in the process. And all that remained of the bill that we wanted to give parents much more control of their child's education, all that remained was requirement that the school board be transparent about what they're going to teach and do that publicly so that the parents know what their children are going to be exposed to. We have some concerns about that because the transparency is only from the school's side. So we don't know for sure if they're telling us everything. We don't know for sure if they will have a presentation and then later add some things after the fact of that presentation. So there's all kinds of wiggle room in this, especially because the bill has the opt-out aspect rather than the opt-in. So that if a parent is concerned and they don't want their child to be exposed to this particular class work, they have to take a position to opt out of that work. We much preferred, and this is the way we wrote the bill initially, that the parents should have the opportunity to opt in. Now, people sometimes say that that's splitting hairs, that you end up with the same result. It's really not. You could end up with the same result. You could keep your child out of it. There's no question. But the difference is this. If it's an opt-in, then the school has the assumed pressure to persuade you that this is good for your child and to show you what's going on in the fullest sense, to sell you on the idea, so to speak. Well, when it's an opt-out, the pressure is all on the parents to make sure they happen to come across it and see it. Now, I know that the bill and other things require the schools to make that known, but we all know that when you have young children and you're busy, you're working, you have to take care of the kids, it's very easy for a parent to miss something. And so we really like the opt-in option instead of the opt-out. So that would have been better. It does have some transparency benefits. That's good. It remains to be seen whether we can actually strengthen that. And there's been some talk behind the scenes of some ways to help strengthen that whole approach. We'll see if that turns out. We're glad for what that bill has, but we were really disappointed that it wasn't stronger because we think the parents should have the upper hand and not the school. And on top of all of that, in Florida, the stuff we're talking about, the sex education stuff, is optional. It's not even required. And so here it is. There's an optional course that the school might decide to teach the kids, and the parents have to opt out instead of the school saying, we have this optional course. Would you like to include your students? We think that's all upside down.
It certainly is. And unfortunately, that is the way a lot of the things are working in America right now. They're upside down. But we did pass a couple of other really good bills. One of them was that the religious institutions can now properly take care of their security within their own structures, and that will no longer be a hindrance if they choose to have a security guard who is armed by the church, by the synagogue, by any place of worship. That will now be a bill. And of course, the one that I like was the fact that Governor DeSantis already signed the bill that says that biological boys may not compete in biological girls' sports. This is a huge break for women's sports because we were looking at how would a woman ever be able to win that scholarship if she has to compete against a man. We all know there's only two genders. There's no way to change that. And any of the other garbage that comes out that the ability to change it is actually garbage. And we want to thank the governor for doing that. The other bill that I was really pleased about was SB 5, and that was the civics bill. And that was extremely important because we are learning now more than ever. Our children have absolutely no idea what America is about. And that is a very, very sad thing. It was passed unanimously in the House and by a very slim margin in the Senate, and it is headed over to the governor's desk. The one that gives me a lot of pause is SB 146, and that one is also a civics bill, but it requires action civics. And action civics is a buzzword for critical race theory because they are teaching your children to act, to become activists. And they use another process within that called service learning. So they are actually sending the kids out into the field, teaching them to protest. And a lot of the kids that you see protesting are there because it's part of their class. I'm asking, and I hope others will as well, asking Governor DeSantis to veto that bill. I think that is a horrible bill. It also uses taxpayer money to promote the YMCA. I don't have a problem with the YMCA. If I want to donate to the YMCA, I will be happy to do that. But to use taxpayer money to do that, I don't think so. The last thing that I wanted to discuss, and I'm leaving that for last because I think it's the best, is the action that we are taking now. And that is to expose what is actually in the textbooks. There are only two ways that a child will learn, and I will say this over and over again. Standards are irrelevant. It is the material that they read and the method that is used that enables a child to be a successful learner. Would you like to explain what we are doing with that? And hopefully many, many more states will pick that up when it comes to critical race theory in Florida schools.
Well, our governor has made some very strong statements with which we agree and we're grateful for, to say that these kinds of ideas that are really rooted in Marxism have no place in Florida schools and we're not going to do it. And we agree with that. The standards that we helped the Department of Education formulate don't leave any room for that sort of thing. But you're right. It really comes down to what materials are selected. And we're hearing from people all across Florida that these subtle references that some even are vestiges of Common Core remain in the curriculum. And some people have used the word tentacles, that these tentacles are everywhere. And when you start looking at it, there are all these little kind of subtle references. One of the reasons that people miss that is that what we're talking about is a worldview that accepts certain things as factual. And so then begins to weave those into the curriculum in a way that the rest of us don't agree with. And so we're trying to let all the citizens of Florida, all the residents of Florida know what's going on in this and try to provide help in understanding it, but also try to encourage the governor and the commissioner of education to continue the process of getting this stuff out of those materials. We are pretty confident that they are aware of the problem. We understand that it's a very difficult problem to solve, but it has to be solved. And we're trying our best and we've given them some ideas of solutions that could potentially help solve the problem. But in the meantime, we need all the people in Florida to be aware of what's going on so you can help all of us point that out and encourage the school boards to reject it and choose better things. Because once things are chosen and in place, they often stay in place for several years and are used repeatedly, 4 to 6 years.
You're absolutely right, Pastor Rick. And go to the Florida Citizens Alliance. There's an open letter to the governor and to the commissioner. Please get involved. Please sign it. Please make sure they get it. Pastor Rick, we are at the end of our show and like to close with prayer. So if you would please be so kind.
I'd be happy to. Let's pray. Heavenly Father, you hear concern, you know them even before we give voice to them. And we pray for our children and these last days of school leading up to the end of this school year. We pray for all the people that are working with them, that you would give them insight. And we pray for the decision makers, mostly in Tallahassee, that are dealing with this problem in our textbooks, school boards as well, that they would have the wisdom to see what's there and the courage to say no, and to find a way in this complicated environment to protect our children from these ideas that will ultimately lead them astray. We need both insight and wisdom and courage. So we pray that you'd provide that for all of us, and especially those who will have to make the decisions and who are fighting the good fight. We commend our state and its concerns. We pray for the nation and its concerns, and leave them with you in the name of Jesus. Amen.
Amen. Thank you all for joining me today. This is Karen Schoen. You've been listening to the Prism of America's Education with my guest, Pastor Rick. Have a wonderful week. See you again next week. But,